Hey, my friend, welcome along to the Nutrition Nuggets podcast, helping you get clarity on nutrition. I'm your host, Dale Pinnock, Sunday Times best-selling author, nutritionist, and creator of the Culinary Medicine College. Every episode here in the podcast, we dig deep on the subject of nutrition to give you clarity, to give you answers, and to expand your knowledge. Hey, my friends, how are you doing? I'm back. It's been a while. The podcast has had a bit of a hiatus because I've been busy doing other things. I've been developing the Culinary Medicine College and building new things in there. I'm working on all sorts of other amazing online programs, which all will be revealed soon. But anyway, here we are. We're back, and I really, really appreciate you taking the time to listen and really appreciate you joining me wherever you are, whether you're out for your morning walk, whether you're driving, whether you're sat at your desk, whatever you're doing, thank you for your company. So this week's episode, this is based on a question that I got on Instagram asking me about what are the best anti-inflammatory foods. And I thought that was a great question. Obviously, inflammation is a really, really important thing to consider and something that a lot of people want to actually tackle and deal with. So before we get into the specific foods, let's talk about what inflammation actually is. Inflammation is a natural response from the body to actually help to protect us. So we've got two types of inflammation, really. There's one that saves our life, and then there's one that is potentially damaging. So the one that saves our life, this is acute inflammation. This is kind of what happens if you whack your thumb with a mallet, or you cut yourself, or you get an infection. That initial result, so you whack your thumb with a hammer and it goes red and starts throbbing. If you get a cut, like the first couple of days, the wound is raised a little bit and you get the redness and you know, you can kind of feel the heat coming off of it. Or if you get an infection, when you get a sore throat or a blocked nose, all of these are acute inflammation. What happens is when there is damage to a tissue or a potential pathological threat, then that tissue responds by secreting chemical messengers called cytokines, which we'll meet a little bit later on, and I'll discuss them further a little later on. Cytokines, these are proteins that tell the immune system that something's going on. They cause a localized dilation of blood vessels. So the blood vessels open up really, really wide. That's what causes the redness and the heat. And that allows cells from the immune system to respond to the cytokine call, get to the site of potential damage or infection, and because the blood vessels are opened up really, really wide, they can squeeze through gaps in the vessel wall and go straight to the area that's damaged or that is being invaded by a pathogen and actually start to deliver some kind of response. That is acute inflammation. That saves your life. You do not want to quell that. And to be honest, there's only so much that you would ever be able to do to quell it, even with drugs. So that's acute. Now, chronic inflammation, this is a different animal. This is the one that has the potential to actually damage our health, both in the, not so much in the short term, but I mean, there are short term implications from it, but in the long term. And chronic really discusses something that is going on long term for a long period of time. Chronic inflammation, this is low grade. This is something that you wouldn't normally be aware of. So it's often described as being subclinical. Subclinical basically means that, you know, your knee doesn't suddenly swell up, or there's not like an immediately obvious sign that this inflammation is present. But if you did like blood work, if you measured something like C-reactive protein, CRP, or erythrocyte sedimentation rate, ESR, those kinds of clinical tests that determine inflammatory load, you would actually see that your inflammatory load is quite high. This type of chronic inflammation, this can cause damage to the cardiovascular system. So we know inherently cardiovascular disease is an inflammatory condition. Inflammatory damage to the endothelium, which is the skin that lines the inside of our blood vessels, is what sets the stage for cardiovascular disease a little later on. Okay, so that's one thing. But then also, this is a really serious one. And this isn't me putting out some kind of hyperbolic, exaggerated statement. You will find this in any A-level pathology textbook, and I challenge you to go out and find it. Any pathology textbook, it is crystal clear, absolutely 100% known and proven that chronic long-term inflammation within tissues can switch on certain genes that regulate cellular replication. The short version of that is chronic inflammation can trigger cancer. It can be a major contributor to cancers in the body. You think of a lot of carcinogens, they cause inflammatory damage in tissues over time, and it's that exposure over time that causes the issue. So it's an important thing to manage. Chronic inflammation is an important thing to manage. And this is kind of the realms that we're getting into when we're talking about nutritional interventions for inflammation. Now, there's one obvious one. Those of you that have been following my work for any period of time will know, and I'm going to talk about that right at the end because I don't want to sound like a broken record. So in terms of some of the key foods that can have an impact on inflammation, the first one, I want to talk about two foods. They're both spices. They're very, very closely related botanically, and I'm lumping them both together because they both have the same physiological activity. And those two are turmeric and ginger. Turmeric and ginger, I mean, the phytochemistry that delivers the response is kind of different, but turmeric and ginger, basically, they help to reduce inflammation because they have an activity on an enzyme. They are what we call a COX-2 inhibitor. Now, I know a COX inhibitor kind of sounds a little bit like a chastity belt, right? But a COX-2 inhibitor, these are actually a class of drugs, COX-2 inhibitors. And it's all to do with prostaglandins. Now, if you've been following my work for any period of time, you would have heard me talk over and over and over and over and over and over and over again about omega-3 fatty acids. And guess what? It's going to be coming up in this one as well. The omega-3 fatty acids, one of the reasons that I talk about those is because they influence the production of certain types of prostaglandins. Prostaglandins are chemical messengers that regulate the inflammatory response. Some prostaglandins switch inflammation on, some prostaglandins switch inflammation off. COX-2 inhibitors. Now, the type of prostaglandin that switches inflammation on, so this is the series 2 prostaglandins, are derived from longer chain omega-6 fatty acids. Omega-6 fatty acids can turn into something called arachidonic acid. Arachidonic acid then gets converted over into a series 2 prostaglandin that switches on or worsens inflammation. The enzyme responsible for the conversion of arachidonic acid into a series 2 prostaglandin is called cyclooxygenase 2, COX-2. So turmeric and ginger act as COX-2 inhibitors. Their phytochemistry inhibits the activity of cyclooxygenase 2, preventing it from turning arachidonic acid into a series 2 prostaglandin. Now, in turmeric, if any of you have used turmeric in cooking, you'll realize that it has that vivid orange color that stains anything that it comes into contact with. Those chemicals called curcuminoids, those are responsible for that cyclooxygenase inhibitor activity. And then in ginger, we've got these compounds called gingerols and other compounds called another compound particularly called zingiberine. Gingerols, zingiberine. They are what have the COX-2 inhibitory activity within ginger. So I've put them together. Yes, botanically they're related, but also their effect is similar. Right, stop for a minute. Have a breather. A lot to take in already. Now, the next food that I want to talk about is... Oh, by the way, before I get onto the next food, I guess I should say that when it comes to turmeric and ginger, yes, you can get some degree of that activity from culinary doses, like the kind of levels that you would find in your food. But I've got to be realistic here. Most of the clinical data that exists has been done on as a medical herbalist, what I would call a standardized extract, which means there's an extract of a plant that always has a guaranteed measurable amount of the active phytochemical constituent. In the case of turmeric, being the curcuminoids. In the case of ginger, gingerols, zingiberine. So you're going to want to go the supplement route if you really want to get a big bang for your buck there. The turmeric, look for the highest strength turmeric extract you can find. Likewise with the ginger. One word of warning with turmeric, if you take any anticoagulant medication, sometimes called blood thinners, so things like warfarin, if you're a regular user of aspirin, or if you've recently been in hospital and you've had to have a heparin injection, then steer clear from turmeric because it is an anticoagulant as well. You put the two together, you do run the risk of hemorrhage. But if you're not taking those kind of drugs, that is a benefit. That is a beneficial thing. Okay, so that was just a little caveat. Right, on to the next food. The next food, one of my absolute favorite fruits, and that is pineapple. I absolutely love the stuff. I love like a great big bowl of fresh pineapple, a nice big glop of like a Greek yogurt, something like that. Happy days. Gorgeous. Now, pineapple contains an enzyme called bromelain. Now, bromelain is it's quite a powerful enzyme, which actually is found in higher concentrations in that tough central core. You know, when you slice pineapple, you've got all the juicy flesh and then you've got that tougher core in the middle. That tougher core is where you've got a higher concentration of the bromelain. Now, the enzyme bromelain actually reduces the production of the pro-inflammatory cytokines. Now, remember right at the beginning when we talked about acute inflammation, we talked about cytokines. Cytokines are proteins. They're little messengers. There's some types of cytokine that switch on inflammation. So in the acute inflammatory phase when you've got all that vasodilation and everything else, that's the pro-inflammatory cytokine, switching all of that on. But then once the immune system gets to that area and starts to sort of win the battle and starts repairing that tissue, you get a different group of cytokines formed that actually reduce inflammation. Bromelain in pineapple can influence the levels of pro-inflammatory cytokines. You can use it as a pain reliever. Again, you would need to be looking at bromelain as a supplement, but you can get some of that activity from consuming the fruit as well. There is some interesting data that shows that it does have a subtle effect. Also great for protein digestion. Bromelain is actually used to tenderize meat. So if you have a little bit of fresh pineapple with you know, like some steak or something, it can aid with the digestion. I mean, it might make you feel a bit gassy having that kind of combination in your gut, but it will help break down the protein, you know, swings and roundabouts. The final food that I want to talk about, this is going to come as absolutely no shock whatsoever. It is, of course, the oily fish. When we're talking about inflammation, we cannot ignore long-chain omega-3 fatty acids. These are the most powerful nutritional components that can influence inflammation, okay? The long-chain omega-3 fatty acids, the ones that come from seafood. You can get plant-based sources if you go the supplement route, but there is no plant-based food in existence that will give you long-chain omega-3 fatty acids in its whole food form. I don't care what anyone says. I'm concerned with the science, not with the bandwagons, all right? So the long-chain omega-3 fatty acids, in particular, one called EPA, eicosapentaenoic acid, EPA, the long-chain omega-3 fatty acid that you'll find in salmon and mackerel and trout and herrings and all of those beautiful oily fish. EPA can feed directly into the pathway in the body that manufactures our most powerful anti-inflammatory prostaglandin, one called a series 3 prostaglandin. The series 3 prostaglandins are powerfully anti-inflammatory and they are made directly from EPA. So there's two ways of getting EPA in your diet. One is to regularly include oily fish, salmon, mackerel, all of that good stuff. So think like sushi or a nice roasted salmon or whatever. If you are a strict adherent to a plant-based diet, then you've got to accept the fact that you need a supplement here. And what you want to look for is an algae-derived omega-3 supplement. But you've got to make sure, look at the label, it has to contain EPA. Algae is a great source of DHA. Algae-derived omega-3, which is predominantly DHA, has been on the market for 20-odd years, probably more than that. And that's great for brain development. It has a mildly anti-inflammatory effect because you get a group of compounds called delta-resolvins that are manufactured from DHA that do have an anti-inflammatory activity. But it just doesn't even come close to what EPA does. But now some smart aleck has actually found a way to extract EPA from algae as well. So if you look for one of those supplements, so Viridian make one, BioCare make one as well. Look for those products. Look for those supplements that contain the EPA from algae, and you will be able to fill that nutritional gap. Okay, so look, that's kind of jumping straight back into the deep end for you guys, straight back into the podcast, the next batch. Any questions? Make sure, you know, if you've got a question that you would like me to answer here in the podcast, then drop me a line, info@dalepinnock.com, info@dalepinnock.com. And one final note, if you love going down the rabbit hole like this, if you have a passion for nutrition, if you want to study it further, if you want to get this level of knowledge and also understand how to use it, how to put it into use, then why don't you check out the Culinary Medicine College? This is my nutrition school. We are now a recognized qualification in 39 countries. We've got an amazing faculty of staff teaching on here. We've got Dr. Alan Desmond, Dr. Gemma Newman, Dr. Asim Malhotra, Christine Bailey, Callum Walker. We've got an incredible faculty of staff teaching you this subject. And we show you how to put it into practice as well. We show you how to use food as medicine. So if that is something that interests you, head over to culinarymedicinecollege.com. Have a look and see what we're all about. There's even a taster course on there as well that you can give that a try. Have a little nose around, see how we do what we do. And I will see you next week. Whatever you get up to, stay safe, stay healthy, and I'll speak to you soon.